Very, very fascinating. It's it. Very fascinating. Okay, so the Netziv is shuffling two very interesting sequences, series. One is a series of the Makos, divided at least by Rabbi Huda into 3, 3, and 4, Netzach Hadash B'Yachav. That's not the only way to divide them, that's the most famous and popular way. And the second, good morning, the second sequences are the four Lashonos of Gula, which I spoke about yesterday, in the prism of the Ramban. So then it's his theory, it's not only his theory, but it's just so fascinating how, I mean, so much of his thought is so modern. How do you take slaves who were depressed and dispirited and dehumanized for 200 years and turn them into a people that had a dignity, self-respect, imagination, intelligence? I can stand in Har Sinai and receive Hashem's word. This is monotheism, it's not a simple religion. So there's a gradual process of rebuilding identity and rebuilding self-respect that already takes place in Mitzrayim. You could see that process is unfolding in B'Shalach and Yisrael, what happens between the Exodus, the actual departure, and Mamad Har Sinai. But according to the Netziv, it happens already through the Makos. The Makos are not just punitive measures against the Egyptians, but they're slowly releasing us from bondage, but not as I said yesterday in the Ramban, that there are so many levels of bondage we have to be released from, but each level of bondage creates a different sense of self. So for example, Votzesios Amitacha Sivlos Mitzrayim, according to the Netziv, is that after the first three makos, when the fourth maka began, what's the fourth maka? Arov. When the fourth maka began, all of a sudden the Jews weren't involved in heavy labor. Mitacha Sivlos Mitzrayim. So the first Lashon of Gula is that first step. The liberation was in stages. Now, the Netziv says it happened in Arov. It's not clear it happened in Arov. He has a proof later because when Pyro recovers from Arov and he hardens his heart, he says, and I'm not going to send you out because I changed my mind. Sounds like he's not going to impose hard labor on them anymore. The Gemara says that in Tishrei, the hard labor ceased, somewhere around Tishrei. So the Makos began in Nisan and ended in Nisan. The Gemara says in Tishrei, it ended based on the Pasuk in Tehillim, Eidos b'yasef samah b'tzeisa l'eretz Mitzrayim, that Hashem in Tishrei, v'tzeich al-gidus l'yasa b'tzeisa l'eretz Mitzrayim. I always thought, and I've seen this in other Svarim, that it wasn't really Arav, it was more Kinim. Because what happened with Kinim, people think Kinim is lice, like you get in your hair. Kinim was this vermin infestation. Anytime you dug part of the land out, it got full of vermin and rabbits and insects. And so if you can't dig any holes in the ground because it gets filled with mice and insects and the land gets soft, so what can't you do? You can't build construction. Construction needs solid ground. But, okay, whether it's Kinim or Arov, these are right next to, right, the Zachadash, Kinim, after Kinim is Arov. But he's going to the Netziv, between Kinim and Arov, I say Kinim, he says Arov. You know, he has a proof of the pasuk later, but right around then, there's a shift. We're no longer exposed to hard labor, but we're still subjugated. We're still second-class citizens. We weren't showing up to work every day with our pails and buckets and lifting heavy stones for pyramids, but we were still subjugated. The subjugation, according to the Ibn Ezra, actually, I forgot to mention, he actually quotes the Ibn Ezra, the reason that the Egyptians released us from work after Arav was the first Makkah in which the distinction between Jew and Egyptian was clear. During Kinim, the distinction wasn't clear. It's a whole different story. The Jews had Kinim also. Read my article this week in the Yom. But Arav endeavor, it's very clear that Hashem did not send the wild animals to Goshen, and none of the Jewish cattle died in Dever. Kinim says, V'tiyakinam b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. So it's not really as clear demarcation. So after the Egyptians saw the Jewish people were spared, they started to realize we shouldn't enslave them and we shouldn't persecute them. Now what happens in the next juncture, the next intersection between Barad and Arba Choshech Makas Bacharos? So at that point, the Netziv says, it's not just that the Egyptians no longer enslaved us and exposed us, subjected us to hard labor, but they start to actually like us and respect us. And you see this in Bo, where Moshe is a very popular person, and the rank and file Egyptian want to release the Jewish people, but Pyro is still recalcitrant. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Jewish people, go to your friends, this is in Parshas Bo, on your way out of Mitzrayim, and borrow clothing, silver, and gold. Your friends? Who are my friends? You're supposed to turn to your friends? The Egyptians are becoming much more friendly to the Jews. And when the Egyptians saw us, our prestige rose, our popularity surged, and our own self-image was improved. So right after Barad, all of a sudden they start to not just no longer subject us to persecution and torture, but the pride of the Jewish people gets restored. Okay, so this is just a fascinating tziv, and that's the second of the Lashonos of Gula. Is the release of heavy labor. Means you're no longer be a second-class citizen, you'll be seen as prestigious members of society. Okay, now, the tziv has this throwaway line that he says in the end of Parshas Vayera, and he says, the same thing is going to happen in the final Gula. That before we're redeemed, finally, our prestige will rise, and nations of the world will start liking the Jews a lot more than they did in the past. Oh, that's interesting. Now you have my attention. I'm actually speaking tomorrow night on some Christian podcast, you know, trying to improve relations between Jews and Christians. So, all of a sudden, the Christian world is more friendly, and much of the Muslim world now is more friendly to Jews than they were in the past. So he refers us not to a Netziv in Shmos, but to a Netziv in Hazino. So Netziv in Hazino says, I'm not going to read the pasuk right now, but it's not clear, Hashem says, who's going to be punished in the end of the days, who won't be punished. It sounds like there's multiple choice. Some nations of the world who are evil to Jews and who are corrupt to Jews and persecuted Jews will be punished, some will not. So the Netziv says, you know what the difference is? Those nations, I'll use my language, that will do tshuva in the end of days, they won't be punished by Hashem. Those nations that continue not to do tshuva, to persecute the Jewish people, they won't be spared. Okay, and it's Ziv's writing in the middle of the 19th century. What does it mean for a nation to do tshuva and be more kind to Jews? So what does that mean in 1850? To host Jews more civilly, and to emancipate Jews, and to grant them full, he doesn't say this, but they will host Jews more peacefully. So in 1850, as Western society started to emancipate Jews, that was seen as tshuva at the end of the historical process, which will release them from some of the punishment they would otherwise receive in the end of days. But now it's not 1850, it's 2023. What does it mean to be more kind to Jews in 2023, to do tshuva? Not just to host Jews peacefully, but, come on, what's the tshuva of the Umos HaOlam today? Support the state of Israel. Not just host Jews in your land, but help us build our land. And you think about some of the worst countries in Western Europe who are mean and brutal to Jews throughout history, all of a sudden they're doing tshuva. Who are the greatest supporters of the Jewish people today? Germany, England, Spain, France, a little less in France, but Central Europe, Poland. So all these sites that through the last 2,000 years were sites of Jewish suffering are now not just absorbing Jews, that's great, that's the Netziv in 1850, but are doing tshuva, as he says in Parshas Hazino, and as he alludes to, because that's what happened in Mitzrayim, because Jewish history is all patterns, and they repeat themselves. So therefore, they'll spare themselves from some of the fury of the end of days, which they would otherwise deserve because of their treatment of Jews. So when I say the Netziv is panoramic, this is what I mean. History. Fascinating, huh? What happened in Mitzrayim, what will happen in the end of days. Okay, have a good day, everyone.